It's a real, I don't even know how to begin, because if I gush today, I'll have to apologize at some point. Mr. Jim Cox, he's a legendary broadcaster in Southern Illinois and other locations, and he's our guest this morning. And first off, Mr. Cox, Jim, good morning. It is so good to talk to you, sir.
Well, you're making me blush, Tom. Thank you. I know I've been a legend in my own mind for many years, but
no.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'll get into the personal components here a little bit later on. Let's talk about Jim Cox. Now, I always think about you as a TV broadcaster, and specifically because of the hour, but you started in radio.
Yes.
I mean, you started, what, Murfreesboro?
Pardon me?
Was it Murfreesboro was your first station?
No, WGGH in Marion.
Right, was your first?
I was a junior in college, and was hired in April of 57, age 20, and turned 21 the next month. And that's how it started.
You didn't, what, radio TV SIU?
You know, I took one radio intro to radio course and one introduction to television at SIU. And I never did finish. I got married and had a kid instead.
And had to get to work.
Pardon me?
And had to get to work.
And exactly right, yes.
All right. Now, when you were, what were the years for the hour at WSIL-TV?
1963 is when it started. And I left there in 1974. Do we have, what, an hour and a half for this interview?
I know, because there's so much. And there are some names that we're going to have to throw in there. But during that time period, I, like many other people in my age group, and, they don't understand. We really kind of, you in particular, there was a certain spontaneity, a certain lack of unplanned nature of it. You know, we were really just learning. Well, everybody use this as an example. The guy you worked for was O.L. Turner. He had to convince his dad that movie theaters were going to suffer at the hands of TV, so we better get into the TV business. And you were literally learning on the job while you were doing it at WSIL-TV.
Yes. That's right. And by the way, Jim Boland was the great announcer that put Channel 3 on the air. And, of course, he went on to become very well-known, really a legend in St. Louis. Kind of funny, I went over from GGH to Channel 3 in 1961, and people some of my friends would say, hey, I don't hear you on the radio anymore. I said, well, I'm at Channel 3. Oh, yeah, that's the station Jim Boland used to be at.
Right.
And I heard that so many times, I said, I'm going to stay at Channel 3 until they say, that's where Jim Cox used to be.
And that actually happened that way, but there were also some other names, one of which was a mutual friend of ours by the name of Bill Plater, but we would also, many people would remember him as Cactus Pete, and then, of course, Jim Boland goes in that mix as well.
That's right. Now, Jim was the first Cactus Pete, and then when he left, why Bill took over. Just one comment about the hour. It was only supposed to last a summer. In 1963, O.L. Turner said, Jim, Dick Clark's American Bandstand is taking a summer hiatus. We've got this hour to fill from 4 to 5 in the afternoon, 5 days a week. I want you to figure out something to do with it. What? And so anyway, yeah, we came up with, he named it The Hour, and I just started calling people to interview them about anything, and it turned out that hour lasted until 1974.
Right. Now, and the thing about the hour was, I mean, I literally was sitting on cross-legged on the floor watching in black and white while you did questions, and you had a desk, and there was a clock, and there was a chair. That was it. There were no splashy graphics, and if there were, they were hand-painted. We'll get to that in a couple of moments ago. But you literally had this era of guests. And it also reflected a different time in Southern Illinois. Phyllis Diller. You would, you know, you're out doing these because you grew that interview segment. Hanoi Jane, as some people would call her, Jane Fonda, she went kind of really off the reservation, we'll call it for lack of a better word, on your show during the Vietnam War. You had an entire spectrum of people, and here's the thing, one of the reasons why I admire you so much to this day is you had a standard of broadcasting and being nice and being classy and handling everybody well.
Well, thank you.
I noticed that when I was a 12-year-old boy. I saw this, this is how to behave in front of a camera.
Oh, my. My head's going to get so big, my wife won't be able to handle me today, Tom, but thank you very much. You know what, though? My mother taught me that. Be nice to people. They'll be nice to you. And that's pretty much, yes, the truth.
There was one story, though, that I've always been a little weird about. George Harrison, did you get George Harrison, the Beatles? Because I'd heard the story that he walked around the square and that they actually rolled the one studio camera they had out on the sidewalk.
We came within a week of being able to interview George Harrison. His sister, Louise Harrison Caldwell, showed up at our house, I don't know, sometime, I don't know what month, but just before the Beatles came to America to get a contract to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. So she shows up at our house. My little brother, is in the number one group called the Beatles in England, and he's going to be here visiting me, and would you like to interview him? I'd never heard of the Beatles.
Right.
And and she had left an LP with Don Medley up in Harrisburg Hardware and said, you can go listen to it and then call me. I did. Well, it sounded pretty good. So I called her and I said, sure. Well, a week before it was to happen, she called me and said, sorry, Jim, you aren't going to be allowed to interview George because the boys are here in this country, on a visiting visa. If he appears on TV, it might appear as if he's working. And so anyway, that's why I didn't interview him.
Yeah. So that the visa wasn't violated. We're not quite so picky, apparently. He just told, all right, Jim just told a story about Don Medley, Harrisburg Hardware. My first job was to take the bicycles off the sidewalk and move them in every night for Harrisburg Hardware and Terry Maynard and Don Medley. It was my first job.
Great guys, yes.
Really, and of course, and then Terry was my Sunday school teacher at McKinley Avenue Baptist Church, of which you were the music director.
That's right.
Yep. For many years.
That was supposed to be a temporary part-time music director job until they found somebody full-time. That lasted for 10 years.
And what's interesting is our listeners already are saying, look, I remember, and let's see, I've got one here right now. And they said, and I didn't know this, they were talking about your music career and ventriloquist act as well. He says, let me see if I can find the message here right now. Jim Cox, well-remembered from Channel 3, he also came to our church as part of revival with his ventriloquist act with Christian humor, class guy, another Saline County legend like me, which is very nice of someone to say. But people are already texting, say, I remember, you know, because that's another item. You, at some points, you know, because this was the early days, and you go, okay, that interview didn't last as long, and O.L. Turner had given you an hour, and you'd pull out the guitar.
That's true, yes. I was not a ventriloquist. I never took a ventriloquist to church.
Okay.
I was the voice and the handler of D-Dye, the dummy on the Claude Moy show, but you never saw me on camera.
Oh, I got it now. Okay. And I worked with Claude Moy. Claude Moy is another Southern Illinois legend. Excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold.
Yeah.
Another Southern Illinois legend. Now, this is how big of a guy this is, Claude Moy, who Jim worked with. He has a letter before he passed away. He showed it to me. Les Paul, the creator, the rock and roll guitar, that Claude Moy told him taught him his first licks on the guitar. And that Les Paul, his stage name was derivative of Claude Moy's, which was Pie Plant Pete. Les Paul called himself Rutabaga Bob. or Rutabaga Bill, I think maybe it was.
And that is in the Cleveland Hall of Fame. Les Paul, and I'm missing the word, where you read about Les Paul, see some of his guitars. Claude Moy is listed in that.
And deserves to be, and quite a guy.
Oh, yes.
Really was, and once again, a class gentleman as well. Now, let's talk about another guy, a mutual friend of yours and mine. We talked about this casual nature, but still this, you know, because O.L. Turner, if you're working for Mr. Turner, Mr. Turner expects you to do your job.
That's right.
Bill Plater became Cactus Pete, and, you know, and we all grew up watching Elmer the Flea.
Yes.
Right? Remember for the dairy company that was just down the street from your home?
Yeah.
And, you know, Elmer the Flea would, Bill told me it was the best 68 cents he ever bought for that magic glass down in Florida. And he put the flea on there, and the flea drank the... And we would debate the scientific possibilities of a flea drinking an entire glass of milk at McKinley School parking lot in the playground. No, can't be. Yes. Can't be, but Cactus Pete says so. No, the flea can't drink...
Yes.
Tell me about Bill Plater.
Well, let's see. Where to start? He grew up in Vienna, Illinois. And I asked him one time, okay, is that you're short for William something? Nope. I was named Billy Plater. And I think he went to SIU. He went into the Navy. Had to be Korean War, I think. And in intelligence, if I recall. When it came out, he went to St. Louis to be an artist for the Globe Democrat newspaper. Really didn't feel comfortable in St. Louis. My memory, you know, hey, I'm not very young anymore, Tommy. But anyway, came back home and somehow wound up on Channel 3. But just the best artist I had ever been close to.
And
you give him an idea for a commercial, and he'd come up with the slides that we use. This was before Channel 3 had any video capabilities.
Right, so you had a piece of cardboard, and Bill was this incredible caricature, calligraphy. He could do it all. Matter of fact, he had his own show where he would, you know, we'd say, put the friendly little clouds here in the painting shows you see on PBS. He did this, except he would go on and showing people how to do cartoons and graphics, and they had the camera set up, and he basically taught an art class on the air.
That's true. Yes. Yes.
He did some caricatures of me, and I would do anything to find those, because I was lucky enough to work. Bill and I became fast and good friends. I didn't want to work with Cactus Pete. I was a rock and roll disc jockey. I'm like, this flies in the face of logic. Don't want to do it. Don't want to do it. And working with Bill Plater was one of the greatest pleasures of my life, because he was Bill Plater. He was such a nice guy. And so talented as well. And so, you know, he would be on the air, and it was the Cactus Pete and Tom Miller radio show on what was then Rock 100, which is, of course, now Z100, our sister station just down the hall. So I had the privilege of working Bill, but you also know there was another Bill. There was Bill Salas, who went on to be Cactus Pete as well. But back to Jim Cox. You know, when you did the hour, you took your talent, the things your mom had taught you, you did your research. You smiled, you were nice, you had a nice presentation, your voice is, it's Jim Cox, that's all we can say. But that's not where you stopped. In 1974, where'd you go?
Let me see.
I think you went to marketing at BH&O Chevrolet.
I did. Well, actually, I went back to WGGH for about a year and a half. And then Bill, Bob O'Brien called me one evening and said, man, we don't have time for all this, Tom. He said, hey, it's 9 o'clock at night, and I live 5 minutes away from BH&O Chevrolet. And he said, man, I just got back from the car show in Las Vegas. I got a great idea. Can you come up 5 minutes away? I said, sure, man. What's going on? He said, yeah, in the Las Vegas automobile convention, a fellow named John DeLorean introduced just an amazing vehicle that I think is going to do well, and for only, and he quoted how many thousands or tens of thousands of dollars he could buy the franchise for Southern Illinois, Western Kentucky, and Southeast Missouri. I want you, he said, Jim, to come to work for me, be my advertising manager, and learn the business from the ground up, and you know, sometime in the future, have a little piece of the action. Well, I'd seen Bob's lifestyle was better than mine, and I'm going to have to shorten this story. You know, you can Google John DeLorean and see what happened. Unfortunately, right. It was a great car. It fell through. But in 1979, when did I go to work for him? Yeah, I went to work for him early in 79, basically. And in August of 79, interest rates went through the roof. Jimmy Carter was rationing gasoline. There were lines at the gasoline pump, you may recall.
Yes.
And at that time, my wife Barbara, she is now deceased, was selling real estate, and I was selling cars and enjoying it. And suddenly, I would sell a car, and you know, they'd say, "Okay, Jim, I'm going to run from Caesar Davenport of Harrisburg National Bank and finalize the loan, and I'll come back and pick up the car." Great. 15 minutes later, I get a call saying, "Jim, this is so and so, and the interest rate the bank wants, and the down payment they require." Is more than I can afford.
Yeah.
Consequently, the winter of 79 and early 80 financially was the worst in my life, and it led to a bunch of other things. But fortunately, the fellow named John Bradshaw, who wrote, he was a psychologist, a family counselor, once wrote, said, "The worst thing that ever happened to me turned out to be the best thing." Well, that winter was not good, and it made me say, you know, I need to get out of here and get back into something I enjoy. And I was able to make some contacts in St. Louis, get hired at a radio station in St. Louis, and finished my career there in 2008. Blessed to have had a 50-year career doing something that I love.
Yeah, and impacting a lot of people. As I said, setting a standard and leaving a lot of people, happy people in your wake. Not everybody gets to do that. You know, during your time at the hour, which is what I kind of assign this value to, because I could walk out of my mom and dad's house and stand on the, I was kidding about, I always liked to go to your place for Halloween because you had really good candy. You didn't stiff me, which I liked a lot, but I could go out of my front step and I could look down and there's Jim Cox's house. And there, it was a personal touch because I knew Jim Cox. I knew a TV star. Which is something when, you know, there are only three channels.
Well, that's true.
How raw TV was at that point compared to today. We talked about Bill Plater and the expensive graphics you see on TV, whereas opposed to at WSIL and all the other TV stations. There was something painted on cardboard. They do a shot, and that's how, and then move the camera, and that's how you actually got that message on TV. You know, the national anthem came on every night. They'd signed off. It was a truly different time, but it allowed you to develop your skills, because the expectations really weren't there like they are now.
That is true, and that the 10, 11 year, whatever, however many years of doing the hour, interviewing thousands, really thousands of people, gave me a leg up in St. Louis when I would do an audition to become, and I did a lot of, in fact, there for a while, I was a full-time freelancer. On-camera narration for Fortune 500 companies, things flying in their corporate jets all over the United States, a blessed time for me. But that was it. I was so comfortable on camera thanks to the hour. And, yeah, it paid off.
Just some of the messaging coming in from our text line here says, "I have the engraved tin cup from Cactus Pete. Those times were a different time. It's morning, Tom." Let's see here. What else we got? "Mr. Cox is doing great. Briggs Gordon, Turner, Cactus Pete, Jim Boland." Remember all these names that we're talking about? My friend George Sheffer said, "Thank you for bringing back all the memories." He was the True Value store, you'll remember, in downtown Harrisburg. Mr. Sheffer. And you know what? And I think there's a reason why. Nostalgia is pretty much normal when you get to a certain age and you romanticize the past. But I think there's some traction in the real world, Jim. And as a journalist for many years and a news person in St. Louis for many years, the inherent viciousness in which we see ourselves surrounded by, and we contrast it to these more simpler times that maybe it's not so much romantic, is that we're under so much pressure, we're seeking a way to feel better in a media world that is death by a thousand cuts for people.
I was taught in my one radio and one TV course, and through the years, you report the news. You are not the news. It's when you're reporting news, you're not supposed to give an opinion. And that's one of the things that irritates me about the current crop.
They don't stop, do. And I think the news cycle, because there's always, you got to have more.
So that's right. Yes.
Now, it's interesting because I often view my life as a trajectory, but you have to have some distance on the object that is being shot out of the cannon before you can actually understand its trajectory. And sometimes, especially if you're a sniper and you're using trajectory, even the smallest changes, humidity, whether the sun is up, going down, what the wind is, and you are a very profound effect on my trajectory, but I did not get the chance to know it until I could look back some distance.
Oh,
and I have a feeling that a great many other people, I mean, because I watched you because you were my Jim Cox. It's one of the things I like about radio, and I think you know this, it's a little different than TV, at least maybe now, is because it's so personal and one-on-one relatable. And so you're my Jim Cox, the guy who lived down the street, the guy who I knew from church, the children I knew, the guy who was so nice to everyone. And so there was a standard that I was absorbing, I was watching the entire time, and you don't know it until later, and you look back and you go, wow, this guy had a big effect on me. And it was because I was sitting there cross-legged with a pair of pliers because the plastic knob had fallen off the TV, and switching it. And here I am, 10 years old, watching an hour-long talk show because of Jim Cox.
So, I have no comment to that except you're blowing me away, Tom.
Well, I'm not the only one. Here's the thing. Whenever I told everybody, I remember him, especially my age group, right? They all remember Jim. So, I mean, what a good deal. And Cactus Pete, and then, of course, Uncle Briggs, which was another story altogether. So,
sure.
Heck, I was even happy when I saw you on TV and you were doing, I think it was a commercial for work clothes for men. I'm going, there's Jim Cox. It's okay to be a journalist and do an ad.
Absolutely. Well, you did anything back in those days. You did whatever you could to make a living.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially because, and Jim will notice that because it's interesting, at the time there was a fight on whose tower was the biggest. Right. You had to have the tower, and down at Channel 12, they had the big tower, so Harrisburg had to have its big tower, too. It was a really interesting time in radio. Mr. Jim Cox of the Hour and a great many other things this morning. He's been our guest, and I really appreciate all the people who have reached in. Here's another one that just came in. Great guest this morning. His short time for a radio that lasted 10 years in my current experience. After I retired from First Baptist Carbondale, 1 week later, my current church called and asked if I could fill in for one Sunday. That was 16 years ago, and they're still putting up with me, much like yourself. When the door opened, we took the opportunity, and that made us who we are, including Mr. Jim Cox. Jim, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time.
Well, I'm honored, Tom, that you would call me and all the wonderful things you've said to me and about me. It has been a pleasure, and now I know how the people I used to interview felt. I was nervous before you called. What's he going to ask me?
Yeah, I've had other people mention it to me that this makes me nervous. And we got people saying you have to have Jim Cox back on again. So maybe we could make the time you could come back and join us another time.
Well, I am retired,
Well, I could probably put you to good use, my friend. Probably can.
But one quick one. I'm still playing guitar and singing at nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And I get invited back.